Hi, I'm Marty Lucas. I want to start, I guess, again, thanking people who are off dealing with some ecological disaster downtown. But really, this event has been very amazing for me. And I guess, as you referenced before, the kind of situation where you do want to kind of change everything at the last second, which I haven't done, but I did want to start with a couple of other acknowledgments. And so I put this up here, and it's relevant to say that I was inspired by, I think it was Sasha, who said she was working on a project in Florida and was motivated to move back to Florida in order to relocate herself in that space. Well, although I teach in New York and have lived there for many, many years, originally from California. So to relocate myself here a little bit, I'm putting this picture up. It also allows me to acknowledge, I don't know, I wasn't here at the very open, whether there was a recognition for the Ohlone people who populated the coast between San Francisco and here. But I think that's an important thing to remember. The other thing that I want to talk about is the idea of being against story, which has been a kind of over or meta preoccupation, and say that one of the things that stories are against is other stories. And I think that, for me, is very, very important. And so I'm going to tell you a very small story. This is the Coast Highway. First time I went on this highway, I was in a 1950 Plymouth with my grandmother. And she turned to me and she said, "We built this highway." And told me the story of how she had been on the road crew. She worked on the road crew that put Highway 1 down the coast. And she was the cook for the road crew, actually. And she gave me a picture of her in a bathtub in Big Sur before the road went through. And it's just a pipe running down the mountainside with the hot spring pouring water into a tub. And there's a wooden platform on the cliff, and she's taking a bath in that platform. So that "we," though, is a very interesting and complex construction of "we," because as a kid, I felt a certain kind of a sense of pride, even, and solidarity with my grandmother's effort to be one of those Californians who really made the state what it is, right? It was another, again, snippet or a tiny bit of a story that she told me much later when I was a teenager that came up against this story. She was from a family that lived on the Oregon-California border. They were what you would call settlers, homesteaders. And they lived right where the Oregon Trail ended. Their wagon train had dumped out there, and they started a ranch. And it was actually on a Thanksgiving evening one year, I remember, she said, "They didn't give us the land, enough land, really, to survive." She said, "All they wanted us to do was build the roads and kill the Indians." So I'm going to talk actually about the production of a collective subject in this moment, which is something that's very important to me. And I must say, I'm kind of wheeling through this. I actually have an article which will be appearing in After Image next month that this discussion's based on. So you can see that when it comes out. So I want to look with you at some work that offers the possibility of a collective subject, right? I'm going to suggest that production of a collective subject isn't just possible, but it's absolutely necessary if we're going to be able to speak meaningfully to contemporary forms of oppression and to contemporary forms of resistance. So this picture is taken in the Plaza del Sol, or the Plaza de Puerta del Sol in Madrid, May 2011, right? The clock is striking midnight, thousands of wiggling hands with no voices. Then the crowd calls out, que no nos representan, right? They don't represent us, right? So this outburst held and still holds in a way revolutionary implications for the political and economic systems based on representative democratic government. The cry, however, poses a different problem for the documentarian, right? How to document a movement that rejects, even denies the validity of representation per se. So even if the denial is in relation to a political system and the representation is audiovisual and falls in the space of documentary, you have to ask, right, how do you interact with a movement like this and what do you do with your camera, right? To answer that question, I'm going to take a roundabout method and go back in time before documentary and go back to the early 1600s. So this is the cover of a book. It includes a play written by Lope de Vega in the early 1600s. The play is called Fuente Ovejuna. It deals with a peasant rebellion that took place in 1476. Fuente Ovejuna is the name of a village. It means something like sheep's well or sheep's fountain. And the villagers are mistreated by a local nobleman, so they kill him. The best known scene in the play is when the villagers are all rounded up and subjected to torture and threatened with to name names, right? And they all respond to who did it with one word, Fuente Ovejuna. All of them respond in this way. So it's a kind of the village becomes a space of solidarity in that way for them, right? But for me, there's an earlier season that's offers something more interesting for documentarians, right? So you can see it's written in verse. This is a contemporary of Shakespeare, right? So it's written in verse in a similar way. So I have to paint the picture, and then I'm going to read you a little tiny bit of the translation of this. So the situation is that the villagers have declared their solidarity with each other, and they have decided that the only way that they're going to get anywhere is to take up arms against this nobleman who's ruining their lives. So, and this is a scene where the women decide to create an army. So there's, as you can see, three of them, so it's going to be a very small army. So it says, we should arrange ourselves in ordered ranks to undertake a task which will amaze the world. So first, Jacinta, who is roughed up by the guards, says, the wrong you suffered means you should be the corporal in our women's regiment. And Jacinta says, but yours was just as great. And then Laurentia says, Pascuala, our ensign, which means a flag in this case, or a banner. Pascuala says, I'll find a flagpole. I'll show you I deserve to be our standard bearer. And Laurentia says, no time for that. Since fortune favors us, our shawl shall be our flag. So they're improvising in this moment, very specifically. And then Pascuala says, let's choose a captain. And Laurentia says, no. And Pascuala says, why not? And Laurentia says, no hero from the past, no Cid, who's El Cid, right? The famous Spanish romance, or Rodamonte, who's one of the main figures in Orlando Furioso, right, can match my bravery. So this is a key moment to me because they're rejecting not only in a kind of an anarchist mode heroes as leaders, but they're rejecting the hero narrative as a narrative. And I think that really says something very important because their rejection of heroics is linked specifically to the literature of romance, and they understand themselves through their actions as creating a new kind of story, right? As forming a new narrative, in fact, through their own political actions. So I would say that these women were 500 years ago, what's now called self-organizing, right? And that their understanding of this, putting themselves both in the sphere of action and the sphere of narrative, is a breakthrough, a revolutionary breakthrough. Let's move ahead 500 years. So this is a poster that went up in the streets of Madrid. It says, take the streets, May 15th. get indignant, right? And not only was this, there was a lot, all kinds of social media that came out at the time. I'm gonna show you a very short recruiting video that was put up anonymously on YouTube at that time, and it's called Wake Up. So it's let's see if this will play out.
Why are fences decor with flowers of the night, songs of the birds like
Es un movimiento que está surgiendo espontáneamente sin partido político alguno.
Nos hemos enterado todo por internet, casi todos.
Entre todos podemos conseguir cambiar las cosas.
So, well, actually, I'll give you Anyway, you get the idea. I'm going to let it play out, but I just wanted to talk a little bit about what you see, because you're seeing both some of the strengths and some of the weaknesses of this type of movement, right? The video's visuals tell a simple story that start with the tight close-ups on these individuals who then open their eyes, right? So they're having a light bulb moment, and it ends with them all as part of a crowd, right? And then there are these little calls in text at the end. So this awakening of consciousness that is the content is a given of the film. It's not a process, it just happens. So, and then we get two mandates at the end of the film. Actually three, go out to the streets, but also spread the cause and get your people involved, right? So these suggestions, and this idea of this transformation of the arrival of political consciousness is presented as kind of a miracle cure, right? It is, you could say this video owes as much to TV advertising as it does to political documentary, actually. The idea of being one in a number and standing up or representing yourself or making your vote count is gone, and we shift to a political act, to a subjective experience. It's more like a religious awakening in a funny way. The plea is to become a node in a network rather than an independent political actor. And this may not sound promising as the beginning of a movement in a way, but this idea of rescuing one's subjectivity as a political goal is very much one of our time. And I think that's the key point I'd like to pull out of this. So we're in a period defined by the exploitation of our creative selves, of our souls, as Italian philosopher Bifo Berardi would have it. And that's as the primary mode of the extraction of profit, right? So that's the primary means of production, we would say. To think of this another way, Despertarse focuses on the viewer's ability to become what affect theorists like Brian Massumi might call a transducer, right? Sort of passing on forces, right? Okay, now I'm gonna move to another film. This is a image of Cecilia Barriga. She's a Chilean Spanish filmmaker, and she made a documentary about this movement called Tres Instantes, Un Grito, Three Moments, One Cry, or One Shout. So she was mainly known for experimental work, but has done documentary. She was a resident of Madrid. She was laid off during the economic crisis, but she still had a camera. So she joined the encampment in the plaza of the Puerta del Sol at its beginning. And the image that I showed you at the beginning of this slide presentation is from from this film. So in one way, the film seems to offer a classic chronological account of the event, starting on the first day of the occupation and continuing till its disbanding 3 weeks later. But it takes an unusual approach to the narrative structure. If politics is, as Hannah Arendt notes, what happens between people, Barriga goes a long way towards shifting the camera towards that in-between space, the space of relations, right? So the 29 minutes that she focuses on the Puerta del Sol features dozens and dozens of speakers, but none have names. There's no lower thirds. Many are only heard. You don't even see them, so they don't have faces either. What they do have is the desire to create a shared situation for politics, one that includes complex decisions concerning how to interact with powers that be, solve logistical issues, and move toward their desire to remake society, all in the space of 3 weeks, right? So the build is very slow. Again, there are no leaders, and ideas emerge very slowly. So we'll dip into the film and take a look.
Oh, sorry. No tenemos permiso, podemos seguir aquí, pero tenemos que desmontar la carpa. Me parece un punto a hablar.
Si se decide mantener la carpa, ¿cuál es la intención de resistencia? ¿Hacemos barricada? O sea, ¿cómo mantenemos la carpa en el caso de que nos la quieran quitar?
No es 100% imprescindible y necesario, que sí, que pasamos calor. Pero nosotros, ellos tienen la porra, pero nosotros tenemos aquí a la ciudadanía, la asamblea de las 4 de la tarde. Éramos 10 personas y ahora miren todos los que somos.
Estamos aquí por otras cosas. Pensad en lo que queremos transmitir y dejaros de carpa. Yo creo que no es lo más importante.
Pero precisamente, si esa carpa está ahí, ¿eso qué pasa? Que anima a la gente a que traiga otra. Y que anima a la gente a que haya otra y otra. Y es solo porque la ve ahí.
Queremos mandar un abrazo a toda la gente que pasa por aquí, que nos descubre, que nos encuentra.
Okay, so that gives you a little bit of an idea. Again, no individual is pulled out, and nothing that anybody says is particularly remarkable, right? But the end result is all the tarps go up, right? And so I think, and that's followed through the whole rest of the film. It's very much no character development. Nobody's singled out to follow. We never see the same person twice. And the result is that viewers, we're somewhere between the voices we hear and the faces we see. We're kind of kept in that intermediary space. We can't identify with anybody as a strategy, right? It forces us to do something else. So instead of getting changing subjectivities, we see group growth around a set of goals. But we also see them developing a shared set of norms for interaction, a system of logistics and a way of moving forward as a movement. And I don't have time to really show you that, but it reminds me a lot of how, like if you use a coding system, like let's say processing, you have to create the parameters of the universe that you're going to build as you start building it. So, and they're very much within that space, right? So the film Triste Instantes doesn't adopt an external sense, like a real historical documentary. Chronological references are also minimal. You're in, and then at the end, you're out. So the methodology and the anonymity help create a different kind of experience for the viewer. Very, very briefly, this is a kind of a flow chart of the 15M movement, as it came to be known, the 15th of May movement. If you'll notice over on the right, it says muestra mucho, which I guess means showing a lot, and it says inteligencia colectiva, right? It means a shared intelligence. And I think that's the other thing that makes this type of documentary different from, say, a political documentary of a previous period, because the experiences are being of both shared interaction, which are these protocols, or what I'm calling, as well as the content, are both being formed at the same time, right? So as opposed to, say, a 30s documentary, there's no leadership, there's no party, for instance, and no masses either, right? So the people are no longer a mass, nor is it like a more, we don't see very many images of police violence, although it's very much in the background. Either, which is important, because what's important is this creation of this shared space of political appearance, right? And what filmmakers like Barriga suggest then is that the occupants of the Puerta are creating a space. And it's not one that automatically holds new politics. You have to fill it. And I think that's the call that she makes to us as viewers. Let's see. Again, I think I probably only have about 2 minutes or less. It's okay. So I just wanted to show you a little tiny bit more, just to kind of give you, to reinforce what I just said. Anyway, that gives you a little bit of a sense, and the whole thing is like that. So, but what happens during this 3 weeks is that they actually form a political action plan. How could I put it? That plan resulted in a variety of changes in Spanish society, including at least one or two new political parties. They elected mayors in Barcelona and several other cities. So it didn't just disappear. It really did change the political landscape in Spain in a significant way. They also organized what they call tides or mareas around different specific issues, education, public health being two major ones. And those mareas still are flowing, as it were, across the Spanish landscape on a more local level. So I think that, to me, is intriguing and suggests that this type of self-formation isn't quite as haphazard and hippy-dippy as it looks, maybe, in this footage. I'm going to pass up on talking about Jody Dean and any evaluation of this, and just leave you with one last line. They moved out after 3 weeks. They voted to do it. And they had one, there's one thought that came to me after hearing everything from everybody here, and I just want to leave you with that, which is this idea in a surveillance society, and I think the quote that you had at the top of your set of slides really speaks to this, is perhaps in the context of an attention economy, the best defense is actually to pay attention to each other, right? In this kind of serious space of political appearance. And I think that is it. Thank you very much.